House Committee on Revenue for February 5th, 2016 will come to order. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 4146. Mazin, give us a short update on that bill, and then we'll hear from our first panel, Representative Nathanson, Representative McEwen, and Mr. Porter from the Governor's Office.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the House Bill 4146, in a nutshell, changes or increases the transient lodging tax from 1% currently to 2% at this time. And then in the body of the bill also changes the color of usage for the revenue from marketing programs to tourism programs. And primarily I have in your OLUS an SMS with a background of how this tax went from the inception in 2003 and so on. It is for your knowledge, and also in a copy in the unlikely event that not everybody brought their copy of the basic facts. I put the page about the transient lodging tax, which shows the amounts of revenue that you've seen through the time. And we can talk about other details later if you wish.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming today. Appreciate your testimony. Go ahead.
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chairs Benson, Smith, Warner, I am delighted to be here today. I'm Catty McEwen. I represent House District 9. I'm very enthusiastic about this bill, and in fact, when Representative Nathanson brought it to my attention, I was happy to sign on this bill with her. She's done a great deal of work on the details behind this. I come to be an enthusiastic supporter for a number of reasons. I come from a small town on the coast, as you all know, and I had the privilege of being young Mr. Prefontaine in that photograph's math tutor when we were in geometry together. We come from a long history of track and field in my community, as you all know, and very few people know where Coos Bay is when they come from out of state or from out of this country, but a lot of them know where Steve Prefontaine grew up. We have pilgrimages to our community on a regular basis from people who leave track shoes and watches and notes and hats at his grave, and they have to be cleaned up on a regular basis. People come to visit the Steve Prefontaine very small little provincial museum that we have and drive by his family home, which is near the track where he set a number of records in Coos Bay. So that kind of sets the tone for where I'm going with this. That is part of the tourism that we garner support from by how these lodging taxes are spent in my community. I'm also an enthusiastic track fan. I've been to a number of large events in our Willamette Valley. Those spill over to the coast. When people come to NC2A track meet or a junior international track meet, or they come to Olympic trials, they stay in Florence. They stay in Yawhat. They come to visit the coast. And even as far as Coos Bay, we have an impact from that. So I think one of the messages I wanted to make clear is this is much larger than the Willamette Valley when we talk about events. That's one thing that I would like to show my support for. But way beyond that is my very enthusiastic support for increasing this transient lodging tax so that in the future, the communities that I represent and communities across this coast in the seven regions that are divided up for these tourism dollars have an opportunity to entice people here in a way that's secure, that up to 15% will become 15% of guaranteed money. It will be divided equally among all seven, not equally, it will divide appropriately among all seven regions, and it will give our small towns, our very small towns who struggle mightily to promote themselves, an opportunity to do those promotions in a way that attract people to wet a line in the Rogue River or go shoot a pheasant over east or ride a bike down the coast or go skiing or hiking in our beautiful mountains or opportunities to see our lovely forests and our deserts. We all need opportunities to promote those better, particularly our counties that struggle because of the financial situations that they find themselves in. So I'm enthusiastic about all pieces of this bill, and I'm I'm delighted and grateful and want to thank my colleague, Representative Nathanson, for working so hard on this. Happy to answer any questions you might have. I do need to leave in just a few minutes, but I just wanted to come in and show my enthusiastic support for this concept, and I hope you will all seriously consider a yes vote in moving this on. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, representative from District 13. I'm here to propose making a new investment to ramp up Oregon's global presence to increase tourism. This is an economic development proposal. It will be paid largely by people from out of state, but the benefits accrue in state to Oregon. This bill does three things, as you've heard. It increases the statewide tax from 1% to 2%. It guarantees 15% going directly to regional efforts, and it adds flexibility for the regions for using it on their tourism promotions and programs. Today, I'm going to talk about both the statewide impact and the big event that started this conversation. First, the statewide impact of a lodging tax. Tourism is a significant sector in Oregon's economy, about $10.3 billion a year. The economic research firm Dean Runyon Associates reports that the travel industry is one of the three largest export-oriented industries in rural Oregon counties. Between 2003 and 2013, the rate of growth for both earnings and employment was more for travel. The rate of growth was more for travel than for microelectronics, software, agriculture and food, forest and wood, and manufacturing. We should take seriously our potential to grow this industry sector as an even bigger contributor to our economy. This bill increases resources for the Oregon Tourism Commission to invest in furthering the state's tourism industry to promote all of Oregon. And we know it's proven that investing in tourism pays off big time. Since the state lodging tax passed in 2003, there's been an 84% increase in local taxes from visitor and travel activity. Every $1 invested in Travel Oregon's advertising campaigns generates $11 in state and local tax revenue. Since Travel Oregon started doing statewide marketing, there has been significant growth in out-of-state and international visitors. For example, international visitation grew between 2013 and 2014 by 9% in just 1 year. So this is also about an event. That's what everyone's been talking about. I'm talking about statewide economic benefits and economic development. Some people want to talk about an event, so let's talk for a minute about the event that spurred the discussion. Awarding the 2021 World Championships to Eugene started it. Oregon will be on the world stage, and a global audience will be seeing Oregon, and not just for a one-day splash. First, I want to be very clear. This bill does not provide a direct subsidy or public general fund subsidy for the 2021 event or any specific entity involved in that event. Tracktown and any other entity will be eligible to come to the commission and submit a proposal, just like others have been submitting proposals since this lodging tax was first implemented. So is an investment in the event worth it? Yes, it certainly is. For those who do want to talk about the 2021 championships, the direct spending, not including economic multipliers, the direct spending indications are $52.4 million spent by visitors and another $85.6 million on operations. The independent economic impact analysis indicates a total output of $314 million in goods and services produced in Oregon. It's easy to picture the benefit from visitors finding places to stay and eat and buy things. All these other goods and services will be purchased from Oregon businesses to support the event. Creative design and production for promotional materials, print and copy, souvenirs, programs, publications, construction for temporary marathon and racewalk courses, IT infrastructure and websites, electrical power and generators, rental of radios and mobile phones, hospitality service catering, equipment rental, including tents, tables, and chairs, and the list goes on. And those services are provided by businesses in all of our counties. The economic impact analysis measures only the direct impact of the event itself and does not estimate the benefit of future travel, business location, or conference siting decisions being made by the visitors who either attended the event or the global audience that watched it. In other words, the value of that global exposure has not been included in these numbers, but it's big. We will be delivering a first-class event and travel experience. But without the revenue that would be achieved through this bill, that opportunity won't exist for Oregon to showcase our state on the international stage in the best way. That opportunity should not be lost. The discussion, yes, should be focused on the opportunity to benefit all the communities in every region of the state, just as Representative McCune has described. Look at what Travel Oregon has done recently, from Waldport to the Wallowas, and how much more we could do. More money will be available to the regions to improve tourism marketing and facilities, and to compete to host other meetings and events, sports and activities. So, if you still want to talk in more detail about the event, because there had been questions about that event, I'll take just a minute or two to address that. Since previous events have been in cities like Beijing, London, Seville, how on earth could we host an event like that here? Can we really handle it in Eugene or in the Willamette Valley? Well, a 10-member IAAF Evaluation Commission came to Oregon last fall, studied all of the details, and said, yes, it can, that this is a good place for it. You know, it's been typical in other places for spectators to take up to an hour and a half, 90 minutes, to travel to an event. Took 2 hours or more in Moscow. The Evaluation Commission determined what Oregon can offer is reasonable and desirable and a great idea. Travel Lane County typically books visitors into other cities for other events when they come into the Eugene-Springfield area. They routinely book visitors into Albany, Corvallis, Florence, and other cities. It's already happening. We know that's the kind of collaboration that will happen with this event, and we know that's the benefit that will spread out in multiple counties around the state. Being in a mega city doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a mega event or mega successful. When the 2015 World Championships were held in Beijing, for example, an entire level of their enormous stadium was roped off in an attempt to consolidate spectators. But if any of you have ever attended or watched or heard about events at Hayward Field, you would know the excitement, the enthusiasm, and the energy for the athletes and for the spectators. Here in Oregon, the sport is well respected and visitors are treated well. This will be the third largest sporting event in the world after the Olympics and the World Cup, and it will be the largest sporting event in the world that year. About 33,000 visitors will arrive through Portland International Airport and stay in many communities. It's a 9-day event. Most of the event would be at Hayward Field, yes, but other events such as Race Walk or Marathon or the World Congress could be held in other cities such as Portland or Salem. And I know there's active thinking around that. Even before that 9-day event, more than 2,000 athletes from 200 countries will arrive up to a month in advance. Think about that, a month in advance for training. They will set up training camps that will be spread out throughout the state. We want to start going after them early. We don't want them staying in California and Washington. They should be staying throughout Oregon. They will find it desirable to locate at community colleges, high schools, universities that have facilities for them. Thousands of hotel rooms will be booked in Oregon, and services utilized from retail and restaurants to media, medical, and financial. But I want to get back to what this bill does. Enough about the event. This bill is about economic development statewide. I have listened carefully to learn what local areas like about the idea and what gives them pause about the lodging tax, the state lodging tax. You already know that lots of local areas have their own local lodging tax. This bill doesn't impact their local tax. Some of those local areas feel that they've been constrained in their use of funds, and they have sometimes been disappointed in the amount shared with them. The first additional thing this bill does is it guarantees the amount that will be distributed to the regions. The current statute says that as much as 15% of the transient lodging tax will be spent on regional cooperative tourism programs. I've taken out the words as much as. It looks like a simple change, but that's going to mean a whole lot to the local areas. It means that the full 15% will automatically be distributed to the seven regions. The second thing it does is it allows more flexibility. Simple change, you're going to see one word removed in a couple places, the word marketing. Again, a very important and meaningful change to local areas. By removing the word marketing, the regions will have more flexibility to spend the money on other tourism projects. They don't have to spend the money on just buying more ads, for example. If there's a project they want to do, it can now be considered. Under this bill, for example, the Oak Ridge and West Fir Tourism Alliance is currently working on their regional signage and wayfinding system for hikers and mountain bikers. Some of you are aware of how popular it is in that part of the state. Under this bill, the Tourism Alliance could use their regional allocation to help pay for signs to connect visitors to the uptown district where most new business development has occurred. They're very enthusiastic. They would like the ability to do that. But right now, the use of the funds is on tourism marketing. There are others in the room who will describe later. Either they will describe for you or you can ask questions, all the detail about how the event or about the funding allocations that happen through the Tourism Commission and Travel Oregon. I want to conclude now by saying this again. This is an economic development proposal. More than three-fourths of the lodging tax is paid by out-of-state visitors, people coming from outside Oregon and from international visitation. Oregon has been awarded a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, the 2021 IAAF World Championships, the first time to be hosted in the United States. Out-of-state and international visitors, as well as a global viewing audience, will see Oregon at its best. That was the catalyst for the discussion, and this proposal evolved to envision benefiting the entire state. This is the time to ramp up our efforts to help attract major events and promote the best of Oregon for tourism. The Seven Wonders of Oregon, the rivers and mountains, wineries and brew pubs and cheese, fishing, bicycling, golf, paddling, and being in every corner of the state. I am excited about the possibilities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Vince Porter. I'm the governor's policy advisor on jobs and the economy. Representative Nathanson did a great job of really covering the breadth of this bill and a lot of the discussion, so I will cut through a lot of what I had provided as written testimony, but I just wanted to come forward and talk about my involvement, and that my involvement through the governor's office began in July of 2014 when we were contacted by Tracktown about their intention to bid for the 2019 games, and it was a no-brainer for us to work with them and support them and find ways for us to win the bid. As many of you know, we did not win the 2019 bid, but we quickly were awarded the 2021 games. And I will say Governor Brown couldn't have been more thrilled when she heard that news. Just to touch on Representative Nathanson's comments about the history of those games and the fact that in 2015 it was hosted in Beijing and in 2017 it will be hosted in London. And for some, I've heard that it sounds ridiculous that any city in Oregon could compete with cities like that to host an event of this size. But the fact is, we did compete and we won. And I just, you know, when you think about the connection that this state has to track and field. And when you think about how deep it is in our history and our DNA, it's obvious that it should be hosted by Eugene. So, sorry, it's been something that we've all been very personally connected to. Anyway, along the way, we've had many conversations with Tracktown and the University of Oregon about the right way to move forward on this. And what it led us to was avoiding conversations about how best to use general fund dollars or lottery fund dollars. So it became very clear from the beginning that the best pathway forward was to find alternative solutions, and that one became the lodging tax discussion. We've had lots of conversations, and I would like to just applaud and thank Representative Nathanson for taking the leadership and being willing to work with us and many of the stakeholders to find the proper way to move forward on this project. I just want to reiterate a couple points that Representative Nathanson made. First of all, 75% of this lodging tax comes from out of state. We always talk about the need to collect out of state revenue to use for better economic development in Oregon. Second of all, this proposal is much more than the state of Oregon. I mean, much more than Tracktown USA. Over a five-year period between now and 2021, the revenues that will come in will make Travel Oregon have the opportunity to make a significant statewide impact here in the state. And finally, we have an industry association that supports a tax increase. How often do you all hear that? I know that there's been much reported about this proposal as well as the track championships, and there have been lots of discussions with various stakeholders. All of the conversations I've had have been good and honest discussions with the utmost of integrity. And we've all been focused on what we all want, more opportunity and economic development for Oregon on a national and international scale. Thank you very much, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I understand you need to be out of here.
Five more minutes. So
okay.
Thank you.
Please.
Chair Barnhart, I just wanted to step back in just for one more brief moment. I mean, my family have been enthusiastic track supporters for a long time and have been season ticket holders at the University of Oregon for their track season for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I would invite each of you, if you have not had an opportunity, not only to attend a track meet at the U of O for just a regular season event, but if you have not attended an NC2A event, or you have not had an opportunity to attend an Olympic trials event at that venue, it is an amazing, amazing thing to behold. We are the center of this sport for the United States. They are knowledgeable people who come. They travel from great distances to participate. And it is just breathtaking to sit in that stadium when an event of that magnitude is held. It is perfectly natural for us to take that next last step and bring the IAAF International Track Meet to Hayward Field. It's just the natural progression of that groundwork that has already been laid. And this bill that Representative Nathanson is bringing not only will benefit that, but across this state will have great benefit to tourism in the future. And I'm once again thank her for her hard work in bringing this to you all.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for being here, especially Representative Nathanson. What's the guarantee regarding the amount of resources that could conceivably be awarded to Eugene for the championships? I don't see that spelled out in the bill. How will that determination be made?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson.
If, in fact, there is.
There is no guarantee.
Right. Okay.
This bill merely increases substantially resources available to Oregon Tourism Commission to allocate so that Travel Oregon can distribute money throughout the state. Tracktown or any other entity will be available will be eligible, as they are now, to apply. They make a request to the commission. They say, we have an idea. Here's our plan. Here's our idea. Here's our budget. They make a request, and the Tourism Commission makes a determination.
Okay. Follow up.
Please, yeah.
So the request is for 1%. Why not 0.5%? Or in one follow-up, did you consider a sunset on this if, in fact, the main objective is to make sure that there's adequate resources for the event in 2021?
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, there have been discussions and considerations of what's the right amount and what's the right time period. With regard to the amount, I'm going to recall something that Mr. Porter said a few minutes ago. When you have an industry association willing to accept an increase in tax that's on its own industry, that's saying quite a lot. And what they're telling me is that 1% is reasonable, the proposal is a good one, and there are plenty of appropriate things that the money could be spent on. So 1% seems reasonable. With regard to a sunset, because it became obvious that this is our opportunity to ramp up our efforts on the world's stage for tourism and travel, this is not about a single event. This is about permanently improving that sector of our economy. It's pure and simple an economic development proposal, and we have not considered a temporary boost to be the appropriate thing, because again, the idea is not it's about one event. I believe there are people talking right now about other very large events that, wow, maybe now we should attract this event to Oregon, or maybe they'll be interested in coming.
If I may, Chair Barnhart, I would like to just to contribute that the reason that I signed on this bill, a small percentage of it had to do with this event that's coming. For me, it's about supporting those seven regions of this state in promoting themselves, which is way outside the boundaries of this event, over a long period of time when they have very constrained resources now in which to do so. So I want to keep saying this. This is not all about this event, although this event is incredibly exciting and will open doors for us, and it will bring people to our state who would never have come here before. But I think we have to continue to build on that then by supporting those seven regions, whether it's Hood River or Coos Bay or Klamath Falls or Enterprise, that they have the resources to draw people to those areas of the state for a much longer period of time. So I guess I would share my interest in making sure that everybody see beyond 2021 and look at the resources that we can use across the state, particularly in our regional rural communities, that's going to have a long-term impact.
And Chair Barnhart and Representative Johnson, I will Travel Oregon has some great data on what they've done with the resources that they have, and I'm sure they will come up and speak about what they think this can do, what this extra funds can do for them moving forward as well. So I think they would provide some good information for you on that question.
Representative Vance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for all the work on this. My understanding had been pretty general about what Travel Oregon does. My general understanding was that its primary purpose was to advertise Oregon to make sure people knew about us. It looks like it's working. If this event is now going to be here, so I guess the question is there a crossover between telling people about Oregon and making sure folks outside of Oregon know about us on the one hand, and helping put on a series of events on the other? And where's that crossover, and is that what this particular department is supposed to be doing, helping with the actual paying for these sporting events?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, I think Travel Oregon, and they should again present all of what they do. I think they do a lot more than just advertise and work really thoroughly, and they do have in the past sponsored events and other things. So should they be doing things in sports? I think that they should be evaluating the best proposals that come before them and how to use their resources. And if that is a sporting event, that's great. If it's a convention, if it's a or if it's a bike trail or something to help with a bike trail out in Eastern Oregon, I think that they should evaluate and figure out what the best impact is for the state.
Mr. Chair. and Representative Bentz. In the next panel, you will be hearing from Travel Oregon and the Central Oregon Visitors Association, and I think it's probably better that they answer very specifically about the degree of crossover. I have heard anecdotally that there are a couple of instances of someone visiting Oregon because of a meeting or a conference that was held here and then deciding to locate business activity here. We know that, yes, if the more people know about Oregon, the more likely it is they will be considering Oregon for a vacation or a meeting. However, recruiting events and recruiting meetings and conferences is a very specific and different sector of activity of their work. So I hope they will describe it.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Whitsitt, please.
Yes. Who is the industry association noted in the top line there that's most affected by the increase?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Whitsitt, it's the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association.
May I follow up, please? Where are your county tourism associations on this? Where do they stand on it? Each county typically has a tourism association. Where do they stand on this proposal?
Mr. Chair and Representative Whitsitt, I have not personally polled each county or each of the regions. Oregon has 7 tourism regions. Those are defined as Central Oregon, Eastern Oregon, Greater Portland, Mount Hood Gorge, Coast, Southern Oregon, and Willamette Valley. So there, it gets a little complicated when I try to figure out the relationships between a region and how a region decides to allocate the money that's automatically sent to it, and then additional resources that they apply for special assistance through grants and other programs that Travel Oregon has available. I have heard from local areas that, yes, they would very much appreciate the additional resources. If there are regions where there is one area that's disappointed in how their region is dividing up the money, then that's something that needs to be worked out within that region. Or it may be more appropriate, for example, for Travel Oregon or the Tourism Commission to have discussions with the region when those regional proposals are being presented to the commission.
Just one last follow-up. I would suggest that you contact each county tourism. We have 36 counties. Contact their official tourism groups and get a feeling for what the other 35 counties outside of Lane County think about this proposal. I would suggest that would be really helpful if you come back to us and say everybody's on board, or 20 of them don't like it, or 35 of them don't like it, or 35 of them do, or whatever. That would be really helpful when we are trying to make a decision for our counties, because ultimately this money does come to our counties.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Whitsitt, I will make sure that we make available to you a document that I received earlier this week. It was prepared by Travel Oregon. It shows what the actual amount, now this is not what's possible with additional funds for special projects. This is just the amount of money that would automatically go to the regions. For example, in the Southern Oregon region, the 2016-17 actual distribution to that region is designated at $175,000. If this bill passes, it will immediately increase from $175,000 to, the estimate is $468,000. That is a very significant increase then available to that region. And as I mentioned, the regions will now have additional flexibility in how they can spend the money for tourism programs.
Representative Smith-Warren.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation, Nancy. You and I have spoken about this, and I know how hard you've worked on this, and I really appreciate it. Your thorough dedication to it is reflected in this, I think, as in everything that you do. Let me ask, and I think these will be easy questions. number one, so what are we talking, even that small number for the Southern District, what are we talking this increase, you know, the kind of total amount? And then rather than ask a follow-up question in a minute, I'll just ask I'll cheat and ask a two-part question. And then while I get the big impact specifically in Lane County, is Lane County discussing raising their transit lodging tax to as part of the region-wide effort for this as well?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith-Warner, I would rather Travel Oregon give you the exact number of what the estimate would be. With regard to Lane County, I have not heard that Lane County is considering an increase. However, I asked our travel association down there called Travel Lane County. I asked them to describe for me how much local governments and other entities had put into previous track and field events. You know, they have budgets and they're always marketing and they have projects. But with regard to a sporting event, since there have been several now major events at Hayward Field, I said, is there any skin in the game? Why should other people consider this if you're not participating? Does it benefit just accrue locally? Well, first of all, we know the benefit is going to accrue statewide, or if not statewide, at least to many counties throughout the state. We know for certain that. But even if you're looking only at the days that the event is being held in the Eugene Springfield area, for past events, I have a list now of how much skin in the game, if you will, has been contributed by Lane County, City of Eugene, City of Springfield, Eugene Area Chamber of Commerce, Springfield Chamber of Commerce, Travel Lane County, and I think I'm forgetting one entity, various government entities and chambers of commerce have put actual, well, sometimes it's dedicated staff resources, but some of them have put actual cash to demonstrate matching, like skin in the game. They have put money into these events in the past, and then they have reaped the benefits of it, which is why there's great interest.
Thank you.
Representative Hill.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to defer my question to Travel Oregon, but I did want to compliment the presenters in your forbearance of playing the Prefontaine card. I think you waited about 24 seconds to say that. Good job.
Wasn't it my testimony?
Representative Leininger?
Thank you. Thank you for letting me have the question, and also thanks for this great presentation. I think this track town, track meet is really important, and I am planning to support the steps we need to take to make sure we can fund getting to hosting that event in a wonderful way that supports our economic development. I have talked to some of the local jurisdictions in my area who would like to see a way to get more of the money that is not going to be spent on this event to the local jurisdictions in a guaranteed stream as opposed to centrally to Travel Oregon with the opportunity to compete for that. And as a former county commissioner, I know that money that you can count on year after year has a lot more value than the same amount of money that you can get in a one-off opportunity because you can bond against it and repay important project costs. Is there a way, in your opinion, to either modify the draft or potentially have a work group after this short session that would talk about how in the future that could be rejiggered or at least looked at to meet everyone's needs if we can't get it done in the 4 weeks remaining in this session? Would folks be open to having conversations to meet those needs, even if they're subsequent to passing this important bill?
Through the chair, Representative Leininger, I have heard, and thank you for bringing this to my attention several days ago, and I've talked with several others along similar lines. I don't know whether there is time in this bill to make those sorts of detailed adjustments. I do think it's appropriate for conversation. I personally am looking forward to discussing some of the issues, not only about the amount. I very much appreciate your pointing out that being able to count on something has an even greater value than thinking some money will be available and you hope you're going to have access to it and hope you'll win the draw that year, for example. I understand that. I would like to be able to say, I don't know whether it would be called a task force or a work group, but a way to convene conversations to work on that topic. Yes.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Other questions for this panel? Thank you so much for testifying today. We're going to temporarily recess the hearing on House Bill 4146, and we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4025. And it's my understanding we don't have any witnesses signed up for 4025. Is that correct? We don't have anybody signed up, so we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4025, open a work session on House Bill 4025. Christine, do you want to tell us what the status of this is?
Sure. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4025 is the annual connection update to the Internal Revenue Code. It affects various programs, and the Dash 1 amendment there would connect filing deadlines that have recently been changed at the federal level from April to March. It aligns again with those filing deadlines. It would not affect C Corps, but it affects partnerships and individuals who help to clear up an estate after an individual dies. There is considered to be no fiscal impact to the measure, and the revenue impact comes from this making permanent an expansion of the earned income tax credit. And the largest impacts hit in 2019-21 at $5.4 million negative. 15-17 has zero impacts because the policy is extended through 2017 prior to this update.
Thank you. Any questions on the measure? Not Representative Vince, you have a motion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 1 amendment.
Representative Vince moves the Dash 1 amendment. Is there a discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Seeing none, it's so ordered. Representative Vince?
I move House Bill 4025 to the floor as amended.
Representative Vince moves House Bill 4025 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Davis?
Is there a way we can make clear that OB has to read every word of this bill?
I think if I understand the parliamentary status on the floor, that happens automatically.
Oh, that's true. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, that motion carries. I'm tempted to ask the last speaker to carry the bill, but I think I'd better carry it myself. And so I'll assign it to me. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2025. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 4131. I think we do have some people signed up for that public hearing.
Mr. Chair, I'll just point out to the committee that, as you recall in your earlier discussion on this bill on Wednesday, that you had a Dash 1 and a Dash 4 amendment, and then Representative Taylor presented you with a work in progress for a Dash 5. You now have the official Dash 5, which is on OLIS. It incorporates the 1 and the 4. So that would be the amendment to consider. Just a reminder what the bill does. It's grew out of the some of the recommendations from the Secretary of State audits report that you were briefed on in January, It requires financial institutions to develop data match agreements with the Department of Revenue and identify assets held by those financial institutions by delinquent debtors.
Oh, thank you. I don't see Representative Taylor. Oh, she is here. Representative Taylor, Pam Levitt, and Don, Mac? Oh, sorry, Deanna Mac.
I didn't write that.
No, your handwriting is quite legible. I would ask you to confine yourselves to the testimony, to the things we haven't already heard. We do have Ms. Levitt's letter in the record. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. Kathleen Taylor, State Representative, House District 41. Yes, we were here on Wednesday and gave our full presentation. Just wanted to remind you that we're asking for your support on this bill, on House Bill 4131, with the Dash 5 amendment. And that encompasses the things we discussed on Wednesday. And I have Deanna Mack here from DOR to go over the details. And, of course, LC is here if we have any legal questions. And I want to thank Ms. Levitt for coming to show her support from the credit unions.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Pam Levitt, representing the Northwest Credit Union Association. You do have my written testimony. I gave you a little bit of background on the data match program that we work with under the child support. So I wanted to give you that program that began in the late 90s. We received the Dash 5 amendment late last night, and my attorney and I reviewed it, and we are in full support. We worked with Representative Taylor and the Department of Revenue and actually made several suggestions over the course of the last couple of weeks. We wanted to make sure we were protecting our member information, protecting taxpayer information, dealing with some of the privacy regulations with the federal government. We reviewed a lot of different things, and we are satisfied with the bill and the Dash 5 amendment. So I just wanted to put that on the record. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. I did go over the working copy of the Dash 5 amendment, so if you have had a chance to look at these and you have any additional questions on differences between them, I'm here to answer questions, but they largely, they've been edited, so they look quite nice.
That's part of LC's job. Yes. Questions for this panel? Representative Vance, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to thank the representative for working so carefully with the banks and the credit unions on this. I really think that's exactly the right way to approach a complex piece of legislation like this. So I really appreciate you doing that. And so it looks like I've talked to a number of people about it, and I'm very happy that this is going to happen, because there is in my years ago practice, I actually had to go collect child support payments, and I know just how incredibly important that is. So thanks for all your hard work on this.
Yes, Representative Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For Pam, I'm just wondering, is for credit unions, is the data match process structurally, and I'm not going to ask you to try to represent that you understand how banks go about it, but I wanted a comparison and to understand whether is your process more rigorous, less rigorous? Is it going to be pretty homogenous?
Chair Barnhart and Representative Helm, I did kind of talk through with my credit unions how the current data match process works. We all have different data processors, so they enter into contracts. We, as credit unions, have all different sizes of credit unions. I have very small credit unions with one and two-person shops up to larger institutions. And so the processor that you're going to enter into those agreements with is going to vary by financial institution. I won't speak for the banks, but I will tell you that there are two ways that you can do the current data match. Either the department or the Department of Justice, which is the child support program, will send you a file and you work with your data processor to match and then report back. Or if you're not comfortable with that, then you send them your files. I'm told that, for the most part, we receive the files and do the match and send the information back. So moving forward with this new program, it will be the same kind of situation. There will be costs involved. There certainly will be staff time. And so we're certainly willing to go down this road. I mean, the number one issue that the credit unions report back to us is compliance burden. So we're not, it's not like we're all excited to have this additional compliance burden, but we understand the importance of this program, and we're certainly willing to work with Department of Revenue.
That's the reason.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. No one else being signed up for this.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
I know in our previous hearing there was some angst by the bankers about compliance.
Well, I just got a hand from the back of the room. Tim?
I just wondered if they wanted to.
I think he's told us he does. Mr. Martinez, something new for us today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association and the Community Banks of Oregon. Appreciate the opportunity to speak. As you did indicate earlier, this Dash 5 did come late last night, or not late last night, but after business hours anyway. And we actually had a board meeting today, so our council, I can't really comment extensively on the amendments. I will reiterate what I said before, just briefly, in that, we definitely support the concept. We want to get there. We don't think this bill is quite there yet. And I do have something I'd like to share with you from Betsy Steinberg, who was here, and this is very, very initial thoughts. There's still nothing in here really for data security and confidentiality, and that is a big concern with us. We think we can get there. Again, we support the concept, so we think we can get there. We also are very concerned, as we mentioned, that this says it can do it at least once per quarter. We really would like to start out with no more than once per quarter. We don't want to make it a real burden on the institution. Washington, as I understand it, started out that way, and they're now every other month. So it is a burden. And remember, there's only, if we agree, 11 states that have gone down this road. We also talked briefly with the Department of Revenue after Wednesday's hearing about taking out the language disclosing balances and, frankly, just saying this person has an account with us. And it was at least Betsy's understanding that they were at least amenable to perhaps taking that out. Because, we all can have $10,000 in our account one day, perhaps, and a dollar the next, or vice versa. So having disclosed balances really is another opportunity as it goes through the different agencies of being inadvertently disclosed. So the idea of just putting down that would be great. And then, the last piece I would say is that the 15 days is that calendar or business days. That's not laid out. So we think we're getting there. We thank the representative for all her work, working with us as well. We think we're closer than we certainly were when the bill came out. We are on Dash 5s on the fifth day, which is kind of ironic, I think. But and I wish I could get my client to move faster, but, they're also working in banks at the same time. So we would very much appreciate it if we would very much appreciate continuing to work with the sponsor, with the Department of Revenue, and hopefully we'll have that opportunity in the other chamber. Thank you so much. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, we heard from Pioneer yesterday.
That was who I just was.
Yes,
Betsy
who you
Steinberg.
Were referring to. I'm right. Sorry, I forgot her name.
But Betsy Steinberg.
I did remember the name of the bank.
Correct.
She talked about the fact that the federal law requires security for files and for information, and
right.
requires that records be destroyed after a period of time, and those kinds of things.
Right.
There's nothing in this bill, is there, that would prevent the state from complying with that federal law?
Well,
is there?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, not being a lawyer, so this isn't legal advice. The child support law is very specific. This is modeled to some degree. It doesn't have. The child support law has actual cost as far as fees to banks. This doesn't have that. There's other things that this doesn't have. But no, I think what she also said is it's very important that there be a state law specifically allowing this. And from the banker's perspective, we would like to get much of it laid out in statute. And again, we believe we're close to that. This just doesn't get us all the way there. And I apologize again for not having Mr. Sherman's analysis, but I'm frankly pretty shocked I don't have it by now, to tell you the truth.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Other questions? Thank you very much. We
Thank
appreciate
you.
Your testimony. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 4131.
and open a work session on House Bill 4131. Colleagues, it's my intention, if the committee agrees, to adopt the Dash 5 amendment and then send the bill to the Ways and Means Committee to deal with the fiscal. Paul can tell us about the documents we've got. I think that I've covered that generally speaking. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, correct. We have the documentation that you would need to refer the bill subsequently to the Ways and Means Committee. We've been in contact with them. Department of Revenue has been working with them. And if you look at the statements, is what we call the lights, the fiscal light and the revenue light. We've started to look at the revenue analysis. We don't think there will be any impact in the current biennium, but we do anticipate some revenue gain in the following biennia as the department is able to implement these agreements. And right now, Deanna has provided us with some good data, and right now their success rate on these garnishments requests is about 28%. So we would expect that to go up considerably with additional information to have those matches. Of course, they won't need to issue as many of them either because they're mm-hmm. not going to just be sending them out there. So we're working through those numbers, and we'll work with the LFO staff. They're working on the fiscal side, so we feel comfortable we'll be able to get some good estimates there.
Thank you. Representative Vance?
Chair, I move the Dash 5 amendments.
Representative Vance moves the Dash 5 amendments. Is there further discussion about the Dash 5? Don't see any. Any objection? Don't see any. Motion carries. Representative Vance?
Chair, I move House Bill 4131 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation for the subsequent referral.
And a subsequent referral.
To the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves House Bill 4131 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommended and requests that the measure be referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee for further work on budgetary issues. Discussion. Representative, what's it?
I can't support the bill. I agree with Mr. Martinez that we need more time on this bill. I believe we need it spelled out that the balances cannot be shown on these accounts. And I am also concerned about the confidentiality having this potentially seen by people who I missed the meeting on Wednesday, but in the collection services through DHS, I guess, see this information. So.
Right.
Thank you.
Do colleagues want a short recess before we vote? No? All right. We've dealt with the issue. Any other discussion? Representative Davis?
And Mr. Chair, I'll be certainly supportive in concept. I think at current, the bill is experiencing the speed at which things move in the short session. Hopeful that by the time it gets to the floor, I'll be able to be a yes vote. But right now, I am concerned. I did not understand, based on the testimony and my specific question at the last hearing, was not my understanding that account balances were also transferred as part of the data match. So that's concerning to me, as well as some of the privacy concerns. So hopefully we'll get there. I reserve the right to support it later.
Okay. All right. Yes.
Is there a chance we could carry this over, Mr. Chair? Just allow these things to be clarified so we all could be on one mind.
The testimony we heard at the beginning of the hearing the other day was that this issue was raised in the first report issued by the Secretary of State, I think in 1997 or 1998. We've had a lot of time. Mm-hmm. We've had conflicting testimony on the issues from the credit unions and from the banks. I'd prefer to move it on. Other Representative Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As to the privacy concerns, just observe that and recall that, you know, a lapse in security that allows confidential information to escape this system, I think I heard correctly, a Class C felony. Very powerful incentive not to make mistakes and to be redundant and do things right. It's hard for me to believe that we as a committee could craft something in statute that would work better than that.
Thank you.
I think our safeguards are in place there.
Other discussion? I think we better call the roll, since we've already been told that some people are not necessarily going to support the bill. So go ahead, please call the roll. The question, excuse me, the question, I should restate the question. The question is on sending the bill to the floor with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
With a due pass.
With a due pass, yes. Thank you. With a due pass.
Representative Davis.
No.
Representative Hell.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Leiniger.
Yes.
Representative Nose.
Aye.
Representative Whitsitt.
No.
Representative Smith Warner.
Aye.
Vice Chair Pence.
Aye.
Chair Barnhart.
Aye. The motion carries, and the bill goes to the Ways and Means Committee. And with that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 4131 and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 4146 and to call the next panel, Todd Davidson, Alana Hewson, please. I will simply note as they're coming up that I have 17 remaining people to testify. I have another committee meeting at 3 o'clock, so take that as your guide. Please say the things that are new in your testimony and skip the rest, if you would. Thank you. If you'd state your name for the record and give your testimony, that would be very helpful.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Todd Davidson. I have the privilege and pleasure of serving as the CEO of Travel Oregon. In 2003, the Oregon legislature passed and the governor signed into law the Oregon Tourism Investment Proposal, which initiated the statewide lodging tax and put in place definitions on the use of local lodging taxes. As a result, Oregon has been able to compete more effectively for visitor dollars, strengthening Oregon's economy by enhancing our tourism industry. Today, 76% of all overnight travel spending results from out-of-state and international visitors traveling throughout the state. The tourism industry is generating results for Oregon that are surpassing expectations. Since 2003, visitor spending is up 58%, from $6.5 billion to $10.3 billion annually. Direct employment is up 18%, from 85,600 jobs to over 101,000 jobs today. Employee earnings are up 53%, from $1.7 billion to $2.6 billion annually. And state and local taxes that are generated by visitors are up 75%, from $242 million to $421 million annually. Collectively, Oregon's tourism industry has successfully gained market share of an expanding global tourism economy. When the Oregon Tourism Investment Proposal went into full effect in 2005, Oregon's share of total visitor spending in the United States was 0.97%. By 2014, Oregon's share had grown to 1.12%. Now, it's important to note that 0.15% is not insignificant. Every 0.1% of share shifted to Oregon is equivalent to shifting over $900 million in U.S. travel spending to Oregon. So that 0.15% is equal to shifting $1.4 billion shifted to Oregon's share of visitor spending in the United States. One example of the efforts to grow market share is found in the research that measures the effects and impacts of Travel Oregon's domestic advertising campaigns. In 2004, every $1 invested in Travel Oregon's advertising campaigns generated $159 in new visitor spending, $6 in state and local tax revenue. And at that time, the independent research firm hired to carry out this ad accountability research said it was one of the most effective advertising campaigns they measured in the country. Yet we're not content to rest on our laurels. So in 2013, Travel Oregon's campaigns were again evaluated and found to be generating $237 for every dollar spent in our advertising campaigns and $11 in state and local tax revenue. Further evidence of tourism's ability to drive positive economic development for Oregon was documented through a consumer behavior study that was designed to measure the effects of travel to and within the state in terms of visitors purchasing Oregon products after they return home from their trip. We learned from that study that nearly 60% of Oregon visitors have stated that they have purchased Oregon products since returning home. So their Oregon vacation became an opportunity for us to introduce Oregon products to them and subsequently grow demand for Oregon wine and microbrews and cheeses and chocolates and other agricultural and manufactured goods. And in 2015, the Oregon Economic Development Association, the coalition of local economic development professionals, awarded Travel Oregon their outstanding marketing award in recognition of the success our advertising campaigns were not only having in driving demand for travel to Oregon, but also how those visitors were prospects for business investment, business recruitment, and business relocation efforts. If enacted as proposed, House Bill 4146 will provide an estimated $17.5 to $18 million per year to the Oregon Tourism Commission to invest to increase demand for Oregon as a global destination, to support communities and businesses across the state in reaching and serving these visitors, and to enhance cooperative efforts and programs that are happening in regions throughout the state. Additional investment will extend the reach and the frequency of our consumer marketing campaigns, creating more opportunities for regional and local partners, amplifying Oregon's collective voice and leading to greater marketing alignment and strengthening our regional and local efforts. We can and should increase Oregon's share in international markets by advancing investment in established markets such as Canada, Japan, the UK, Germany, and Australia, while increasing our investments in the growing markets of China and Brazil. In 2014 alone, Oregon showed a year-over-year increase in international visitation of 9% and international visitor spending of 7%, to a total estimated annual economic impact of $840 million from international visitors alone. Also, at a time when Oregon communities are still recovering, we can strengthen new niche tourism infrastructure with agritourism and outdoor recreation initiatives and increase services to help tourism entrepreneurs achieve the kind of success that we'd like to see them have that will positively impact local economies in both urban and rural Oregon alike. HB 4146 specifically amends ORS 284.131 to require the Tourism Commission to appropriate 15% of the statewide lodging revenue to designated tourism regions. Based upon the forecasted lodging revenue, we anticipate the funds dispersed through this program will increase from roughly $1.7 million annually to $5.6 million annually in 2017-2018. Using the current regional definitions and regional pro rata shares, the regional allocations are estimated to be as you see here on the screen. The increased statewide funding would also support the development of major events and projects with the kind of long-term potential to create travel demand for the destination as well as for the state. Should House Bill 4146 become law, Travel Oregon will undertake an industry-wide approach to create an enhanced marketing strategy. We will specifically survey our industry partners, just as we did back in 2003 when the initial 1% statewide lodging tax bill passed, surveying our industry partners to gather their intelligence on what markets, what messages are generating returns and results for them, convening similar meetings with our industry partners across Oregon to gather that similar information firsthand. And of course, hold a public meeting and formal public hearing to review proposals to modify the Tourism Commission's budget. I am grateful for the opportunity to appear before you today and speaking on behalf of HB 4146, and will be happy to answer any of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, please.
Chairman Barhart, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here this afternoon. My name is Alana Hewson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for the Central Oregon Visitors Association. I was also appointed by the governor to serve on the Oregon Tourism Commission, which is an incredible honor, and I'm presently serving as chair of the commission. I have brilliantly prepared remarks to share with you today, but in the effort of being succinct and to the point, you raised some questions during the last panel discussion, and we would welcome the opportunity to address some of those questions. So again, you've heard Todd highlight the independent research that demonstrates the power of the tourism industry to create jobs for Oregonians and the role of Travel Oregon to create demand for visitor travel from across the country and around the world. One of the questions that was raised in the prior comments was, what is the direct correlation between the tourism industry and economic development? And I can tell you that in Central Oregon, we conducted a study in partnership with the Central Oregon Community College to take a look at how are new businesses launched within our region, and what's the direct connection of tourism to new business starts? At the time that the study was conducted, 78% of all new business starts in Central Oregon were initiated by people who first visited on vacation. We know that Oregon provides an extremely authentic experience for visitors, and the connection between new business, economic development, and long-term diversification of Oregon's economy is directly tied to tourism, marketing, and promotion as an economic driver. The Commission takes seriously our commitment to provide a demonstrable return on investment of Travel Oregon's marketing, sales, and development programs, ensuring that impacts from Travel Oregon initiatives are experienced statewide. Another question that came up in the prior panel was the impact of the regional investment and the growth that would be provided to regions based upon the passage of this legislation. I can tell you that as the regional destination marketing organization representing Central Oregon, our relationship with Travel Oregon is absolutely pivotal to our success. We're one of the smaller regions in the state, both geographically and financially, and we would be unable to execute our programs effectively without the collaboration and partnership of Travel Oregon. The opportunity to have additional funding from the statewide level enhance our regional marketing programs is absolutely critical to the vision that we see and the possibility that we see for economic diversification lending to tourism promotion. Central Oregon is one of the more recreation-oriented aspects of the state. Tourism is the single largest industry in our community, and we want to become more diversified beyond the tourism base, but we know that tourism is the engine that is going to get us where we need to be. Travel Oregon is comprised of a team of professionals, the like of which is lauded nationwide. We have been very fortunate that through Todd and his professional staff team, Oregon is now playing on the national stage. The opportunity for these resources to take what Travel Oregon has already accomplished and leverage that as we look to the future for Oregon is absolutely pivotal to where we would like to see this state be in the next 5, 10, 15 years. Oregon is fortunate that each of our seven regions is uniquely different, resulting in different tourism product strategies and objectives, all working in synergy. A key program of this bill, again, is the regional investment that would flow from the state out to the regions. We are strongly supportive of this initiative and of the mechanism for collaboration and communications that Travel Oregon has in place. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Whitsitt and then Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you. I was wondering if you could discuss the distribution among the seven regions. One looks like it's the greatest amount, $2.2 million or whatever, right around Portland. And so I was wondering, given that the rest of the state has all the beauty in it, if you will. Natural beauty, I'll say. How you came up with the distribution plan, because it looks like over a third of the state gets the least amount of money. That would be the area that Representative Ben represents, pretty much, far eastern and the southern part, and we have Crater Lake, and we have all kinds of wonderful things down there, and we're getting a little bit, and Portland's getting $2.2 million. So I was wondering if you would discuss, is it based on population? It's not based on beauties.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Whitsitt, gosh, I've got so many lines running around, but I'm going to just speak to your question for the sake of time. But we are lucky to be in such an incredibly beautiful destination as Oregon, which does not mean that it sells itself, but it certainly makes our job a heck of a lot easier when we are able to put the images and opportunities and amenities in front of our potential visitors around the world. By statute, ORS 284.131 specifies that those regional dollars are appropriated to the regions on a pro rata basis. So in other words, it's not population, but in other words, it's as that percent of state lodging tax is generated within that region, it comes to, it goes back to that region then. So that is the formula for how it works. So if 12% of the money comes from the Willamette Valley, then 12% of that 15% goes back to the Willamette Valley.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Whitsitt will talk later about how beautiful Portland is. I would like to also just briefly, you know, Travel Portland does a lot of promotion of the state as a whole. I mean, I see those ads, and indeed, it's we're the gateway to all these wonderful, beautiful places in the state, in their defense. So I just wanted to ask you part of what I had asked the prior panel that they asked me to ask you. So you said you talked about the 15% would go from 1.7 million to 5.6 million. Mm-hmm. So, but how about the whole amount? That it's 1% now, it's doubling to 2%. What is the estimated increase in overall receipts that additional 1% will bring in?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Smith-Warner, we anticipate that in the first year of collections, it would be roughly $17.5 to $18 million that would be generated. The 15% program, that's the total 1% that additional 1% would generate. So in other words, the budget of Travel Oregon would go from roughly $17.5 million to $35 million per year. So a $17.5 million increase. The estimate that I provided you on the 15% program is over the full 2%. So that would be 15% of the anticipated 2% collections, which is the $5.6 million.
Gotcha. Yep. And so it's $5.6 million is 15% of the 35-ish million that the 2% will bring in.
And thank you for providing me the 35-ish million. We can certainly put a finer point on that.
Technical
but yes,
term.
But that's exactly how that is derived. It is a 15% of the full 2% of the receipts.
Thank you, Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think on page 2 of your report you referenced a 2013 evaluation. Could we get copies of that?
Yes. Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, by all means, we can provide you with copies of our ad accountability research and other research that's been done on our programs.
And if you'd provide that to Legislative Revenue Office, they'll make sure it's distributed.
Happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the assertion there is that for every $1 spent, it generated $237 in visitor spending and $11 in tax revenue. And I just want to see how that works, because that really is the heart of your argument. And so that somehow if we put this additional $17 million in, we're going to get 237 times that back, apparently. Is that what that's telling us?
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Benz, not entirely. The return. I spoke specifically to the return on investment for dollars that are invested into our domestic media advertising campaign. That's what's measured in that particular ad accountability research. It's different when you're measuring your international sales efforts, and we also do matching grant programs, and we also will have 15% of the money going into a regional program. So this is specifically measuring Travel Oregon's advertising domestic advertising program that's generating that $237. So to be clear, if we were to take $5 million of the new resource and put it directly into a domestic media advertising buy, based on that research, it is safe to conclude that we would generate roughly $1.2 billion in additional economic activity.
Yes, please.
And that would be up to your commission to direct you to do that if they chose. But here's a question for you. I asked it earlier. I didn't get the answer. And that is, it appears that your mission, although I could not find it when I went online here, is to do what we are now talking about, promote Oregon, as opposed to put on sporting events. And so in anticipation of the request from Track Oregon or whoever for a large chunk of money to help out Eugene, what are the sidebars that you would anticipate would be put in place to be consistent with your mission, as opposed to becoming a ready source of funding for perhaps, you name it, when it comes to athletic events? But we've been asked before in other committees to support a lot of different types of athletic events, and so I'm just wondering where that, I asked previously, where is that line?
Mm-hmm. Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Benz, we look at a lot of our sponsorship opportunity as this may be, as in lieu of advertising, what could we look to see? Now, this is international. I mean, this is 200 different countries from around the world that are going to be sending delegations to Eugene, to Oregon, and spending time here. So you've got the direct economic impact of the event itself, but then you also have the PR potential of televised broadcasts around around the world. All this is going to need to be evaluated, but we look at these things as, in lieu of advertising and public relations, how does this then, how can we evaluate this? So we, like you, evaluate these kinds of programs all the time. We have folks coming to us talking about a particular program that they would like us to participate in, and we crunch the numbers to determine, is this going to be the highest and best use of the resources that, we've been provided? So we do take that marketing role very, very seriously.
Yes, please.
Right. Well, the parallel between this and the film and video credit is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. So if they came to you and asked for money and said, hey, we can get just the same degree of notoriety creating a film called Wild as whatever, then you would say, sure, great. So what we're hearing. Yeah.
Chair Barnhart, Vice Chair Bent, in fact, we did work with the Film and Video Office on the movie Wild. And while we weren't involved in their work with the tax credits, the scouting and the like, once the movie was done in the can, as they would say, then we got heavily involved, and we used the movie Wild and participated in their Hollywood premiere, where we worked with the folks in Los Angeles with the production studio, and provided Oregon wines, Oregon beers, Oregon distilled spirits to provide the reception afterwards for their 1,000 VIP guests that were coming, other production companies, other directors, other folks that might be interested in bringing future film projects to Oregon. In return for that, they changed the red carpet to a beige carpet so it more represented the Pacific Crest Trail. They put trees, they put Welcome to Oregon signage, and they created the entire venue to be, as you would see in People magazine, for example, as folks were showing up on the former red carpet, they had the opportunity to actually have a little taste of Oregon. Subsequently, when that movie was premiered around the world, we used it as an opportunity to promote Oregon in London, in the Netherlands, in Germany, and Australia, New Zealand as well. So that's how we then, in turn, leveraged that movie.
My follow-up is, as so often is the case, the cause and effect of almost all these investments is really difficult. So although what you've told us is, I'm happy to hear it, I'll be much more interested in looking at the nature of the report that suggests and mm-hmm. discloses to us the return on the investment, because it's like so many of these things, they sound great, we all love them, but at the end of the day, the question is, what's the return on the investment? So I'm sure that your report will show it. Anything else you have, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, we're asking folks to pay another tax, and we need to see what it's going to buy for us. So it's easy to get lost in all of the glitter. It doesn't sell well when you get home. Mm-hmm. And have to say you voted for a tax. So yeah. I'll look forward to it.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Benson, if I may, just in closing on this portion, we are very hard on ourselves when it comes to running these kinds of economic impact studies and return on investment studies. And we've been with this particular firm for a while so that we're able to track changes over time in terms of our advertising effectiveness. But in particular, we approached the state economist at one point and actually floated the idea that the state's investment in travel and tourism should possibly be taken into consideration when putting together a revenue forecast, because there is a correlation between our investment in travel and tourism and state and local tax revenue that is being generated. Because at the state level, it's not just the lodging tax we're talking about. We're talking about personal income taxes, corporate income taxes, fuel taxes. In fact, visitors are generating roughly 20% of the state's fuel tax. So we wanted to be very judicious in our conversation with the state economist, and he said, would you be willing to have an independent research firm review your research? And I realize that sounds a lot like government work when you have an independent research firm evaluating independent research that's been done for you, but it was worth doing. And so we hired another company, and they went through and evaluated the methodology and the results of these advertising accountability studies and came back by telling us that the methodology was strong and the results were conservative. In fact, they went as far as to say in a particular meeting before the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors, the results are almost too conservative, and they might want to push back on us a little bit to be a little more, you know. So when somebody tells me I'm being too conservative in my fiscal estimates, I'm very content. But I appreciate the question, and we will certainly get that report to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Leininger, please.
Thank you. Thanks for being here. I alluded earlier to the fact that I've heard from some local jurisdictions that they want to see this event be successful, and I certainly do, and I want to support a tax that is necessary to help make sure we can do that. Mm-hmm. But that it would help them if there were a conversation, even if subsequent to passing something this short session, to talk about how we best allocate that $17 million in additional resource that may not be needed for the important event, and whether it all goes to Central Travel Oregon or if the 15% gets bumped up to some higher number for local jurisdictions, and perhaps even how it gets allocated within the jurisdictions. Would you support, if that were a need that local communities had, so that our voters could feel comfortable with this tax and that our members could, would you be able to support having a conversation like that after the session is over in preparation for 2017?
Chair Benz, Representative Leininger, if I understand your question correctly, I will state history. In 2003, when the bill passed, I traveled the state and met with local communities and industry groups specifically to hear from them two things. One, how would you like to see this regional program designed, because it was new in 2003? And secondly, what were ideas that they had for the state tourism programs and things that they were experiencing based on their own marketing and their own research and some of the things that they were hearing from consumers alike? So we did exactly that. We held those kinds of conversations. And as I testified here today, should this bill pass, then we will undertake that those same kinds of meetings with the folks in the industry around the state, in the communities across, in regions across the state, to make sure that we've heard their insights, ways that we might look at modifying the program, perhaps implementing a matching grant program, some other things that are currently allowed in statute. But having that conversation is something we currently do. We see it as an ongoing part of what we do as Travel Oregon. It's kind of in the nature of Oregon's travel and tourism industry. And so we would certainly do that.
Yes, please.
Thank you. The key need that I am hearing is that guaranteed funding streams to local jurisdictions have much more value than the same amount of money that you can apply for in a grant of some limited number of year duration, because you can use it as an amortization stream for general obligation bonds. And so I think the theme I am hearing is that we would want to explore whether a larger share than 15% is per se given to the local jurisdictions so that they can count on it indefinitely going forward as a repayment stream. But I'm hearing you say that you're open to these conversations, which for me is a good answer.
What is the current amount that goes to the locals?
Currently, right now, it's
percentages.
I'm going to be estimating because I don't have the actual number right here in front of me. It's probably right around 10%. It's probably right around $1.7 million with a $16.5 million budget.
Okay, so about 10% now. When we adopt the change in line 24 on page two of the bill, which removes the as much as in front of 15%,
correct,
then that would require you to actually distribute 15% rather than something less than 15%. Is that right?
I've heard several people
have asked questions about that issue, and I wanted to make sure we had it nailed down that the bill already increases the percentage from the current 10% to 15% and locks it in to that number. Now, I understand you're asking about a slightly different thing, but I think it's important that we understand both of those issues. Did you have another question?
No, I do understand that issue. And the issue I'm hearing from constituents is that they would like it to go
to be more
higher.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to be certain that we hadn't missed that point, because that is a significant change in the bill already by taking as much as out of the current law. Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say a few things for those members that haven't had a chance to work or have a district relationship with Travel Oregon. My district has two of the seven wonders of Oregon in it, and that campaign has been very successful, to the point that I'm now co-convening a Oregon Regional Solution Task Force to try to figure out what to do with the overcrowding in the Columbia River Gorge. We're literally being loved to death. Mm-hmm. By visitors from all over the world. It's a good problem to have, but unfortunately our resources are being taxed to the point if we've got to do something. But I wanted to say, too, I know the state of Washington recently passed legislation that created a cabinet-level position within their governor's cabinet specifically to look after the regional the recreational tourism. They have a person there that's just focused on policy, making sure that other parts of the government aren't doing things that conflict and constrict recreational tourism in the state of Washington. And that's an intriguing idea for me, and it's something we may look into for the next session. We can get your comments about that. But thirdly, I just want to put the potential concern on your radar, and it's around the issue of recreational liability. It's not related to this committee, but it's something I'm working on. But a recent Supreme Court decision has really created some gray area. And I know as we talk about not just the track championships in 2021, I've heard other people float ideas about the X Games and other things, which obviously are risk taking activities. This is something we're going to have to address as a state in the near future to make sure that there aren't impediments in place that restrict us from being the world's playground, if you will. So I'll be happy to work with you and talk with you offline about that, too.
Thank you very much.
Chair Barnhart, Representative
Johnson.
Excuse me.
That's on a different topic.
Sure.
We have a severe time constraint, so I'd prefer you do take that conversation
happy
offline.
Happy to.
Thank you. Other questions on the bill for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony very much, and it was very thorough and complete. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Let's
Chairman.
Hear from Bill Perry and Karen. I'm going to miss the name. Is it Utz?
It's Utz.
Utz. And again, I'll make the same admonition, which I made fairly unsuccessfully with the last panel, that we limit the testimony to the new information and as brief as reasonably possible. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bill Perry, representing the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, the trade association that is supportive of the measure. excuse me. The only thing that I guess I would add is number one, Chair Barnhart is the only one on this committee that sat through the 2003 legislation, which was not a pretty process.
I had a great time.
Yeah. But the one thing that it did was, as one of the previous speakers mentioned, it locked in the local amounts and the state amounts, because before that time, when local governments were struggling for money, they would pull money out of the local DMOs, which is the destination marketing organizations, which made it hard for them to sign contracts. And the state was always fighting for economic development dollars inside of that department. So the one main thing that bill did was it stabilized funding for both the state and the locals, which allowed these relationships to move forward. So actually, when the governor's office stepped forward and asked us to support this effort way back, the previous governor, I didn't think my members were going to go for it. And I went to the lodging committee, which Ms. Hutz serves on, and a hotel owner from Portland that didn't support the original 1% or support City of Portland has a TID, which is a 2% marketing, didn't support either one of those. I thought he raised his hand. And I thought he was going to shout about it. But what he said was, I was against these things in the past, but I'm surprised and amazed at how successful they are. So if we are going to raise this tax again, I don't want it to be just about Tracktown, which everybody agrees is a great event, but what is it that we can enhance moving forward that will keep moving that bar for this? And so we had Travel Oregon come to our next and talk about the markets they want to get into in Asia and Europe and a lot of different things. We're talking about, you know, helping Eastern Oregon. I will say that through Nancy Nathanson's leadership was the one that added the second components, because we were just talking about the 1% to 2%. But in the meeting she had with the different DMOs and others, you know, really heard the concerns, and obviously Travel Oregon and myself have heard the concerns from the DMOs. And so that was a change that she made. And so we do appreciate that. We support those changes. There is just a fine line with how much money you do send, because some of them can handle and some of them can't. And so it really is a kind of a work in process. But, you know, as we look at future sessions, I think if you get into a full session, that Band-Aid of the 2003 fight, I don't think will be very pretty, and it's not something I think our industry is willing to look forward to. But I do think if there's a way that we can do this to make everybody comfortable, I don't think you've seen any pushback from us. And I do know that when they say the industry, I will say this is a tax increase, and I represent businesses. So if you think everybody's uniform in this, I'm not going to sit here and say they are. Also, as you find out, you guys have been in the Revenue Committee, and some of you on Ways and Means. When you talk about additional revenue, people are going to fight over the money. It's two components that are going to happen in this legislation, but we are very comfortable that what we've seen with both the state and the local advertising is, I do think this bill, the way it is written, helps the most people as fair as possible. Now, people may not agree with me on that, but what we're trying to do is make sure that everybody benefits in our industry and in the advertising industry. So we do think that the bill comes pretty close to accomplishing that. So with that.
Representative Barhart, the rest of the committee. I'm Karen Utz. I am a small business owner in Dundee, Oregon, where I own the Black Walnut Inn and Vineyard. So I'm a lodging operator. But in addition to that, I've had the wonderful privilege of being appointed by the governor, and I've been on the Tourism Commission for, I believe, 6.5 years, and I'm in my last term of that. I also have had the great privilege of serving with the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association, and Bill commented about the committee that I sit on now. So I have kind of a diverse piece of information to bring you. I'm not going to go through all the statistics and all that stuff because you've heard them already, and, you know, I'm telling you from being on the commission, Travel Oregon knows what they're doing with funds, and they are very successful. So I am pleased with today's House Bill 4146 draft, and as I say, I've always been supportive of the careful work of Travel Oregon, but I want to speak as a lodging operator. I know that the Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association with Jason have gone around and have held, you know, conversations throughout the state. I know that 100% of the lodging operators are never in favor of an increase in lodging tax. However, I also know that there are very many of us that are very comfortable with this because we recognize the work that Travel Oregon does. I am in a rural area. This will not only lift up rural areas because of the increase that you saw in the amount of money that will come to each region, but it will also increase the urban areas. And so with that said, you've heard all the statistics. You've heard Bill's side. I'd like to ask you to please see this through. And please feel free to call on me should you have any questions or want to know anything from a small lodging operator, small businesswoman's perspective.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I would like to just comment quickly on Bill's comment about these issues of the distribution of funds and how the restrictions are managed. That was, of course, the issue that came up in 2003. The idea that we should have a tax like this, which didn't exist before, was not really contested, I think. It was the issue of how the local municipalities were going to be able to spend their own money and how the state money was going to be distributed. And that was the whole controversy. And I think your adjective description of the issue is absolutely right on. And this bill, of course, it does a very good job, I agree with you, of avoiding most of that particular discussion. The comment to you is, or really it's a question, you're one of the people who has to collect this money, aren't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and you're willing to do it?
You bet.
Okay, all right. Other?
And yes. Republican or Representative Barnhart, I would like to just say one thing in answer to a question that Representative Johnson asked. He was asking about earlier about the tax and about how this would be, and about he asked about sunsetting and he asked about 0.5%. And I will say that the first time this was brought up to me in the ORLA meeting, I was so against it because it was all about only doing Tracktown and sunsetting it. I could never support that. And I don't think a lot of lodging operators could support it in that respect. However, looking at the big picture and looking further down the road, if we are going to make a change in this legislation, let's make a good change. Let's don't go for 0.5%. The 1% is what we feel is appropriate.
Thank you. I appreciate that testimony. And thank you for your testimony. I'm going to take the last panel of people who are look to me to be mostly from out of town. There are people signed up here who are not normally in the building. I want to know which ones of you are going to find it very inconvenient to come back on Monday. Can you give me a hand? I'm sorry, your name is?
Nancy Mattello with Pax Burgess, Oregon.
Okay, Nancy Mattello. All right. So let's hear from Laura Curtis, Drew Mihalik, Dan Jarman, and then we'll hear from Nancy, and then we'll recess the hearing until Monday, simply because I'm out of time in order to get this done. And I will note that including Nancy, we have about 10 minutes.
I'll go real quick. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Dan Jarman, representing the Oregon Wine Growers Association. We're the trade group that represents the wineries and vineyards throughout the state of Oregon. We are very supportive of this legislation. The basis for our support is very simple. Expanded tourism in the state is critical to the wine industry now and into the future. It's estimated that we have about 700 wineries in the state of Oregon, almost 240 more than we had just 5 years ago. If you think our industry is large, it really isn't. About 70% of our wineries are producing about 5,000 cases of wine a year or less. And what that means is these are small businesses, usually family-run businesses in rural Oregon. The buying preferences of consumers has changed, and it's increasingly important for the consumer, directed to consumer sales in tasting rooms. We need people to go to tasting rooms, enjoy the wines, develop an affinity for the wines, and become lifelong customers. This legislation is a great step in the right direction of bringing more tourists to Oregon to support our Oregon wine industry. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, I'm Drew Mihalik, director of the Oregon Sports Authority, testifying in support of House Bill 4146. The late Nelson Mandela eloquently stated, "Sport has the power to change the world. It has the power to inspire and unite people in a way that little else does. Our nonprofit organization is the champion of power for the power of sports, serving as our state's Chamber of Commerce for sports tourism. For more than two decades, we've brought in events and franchises which have had a greater than $250 million economic impact. We were founded to secure local, regional, national, and international sports events through public-private partnerships, which impact the regional economies in Oregon, as well as augment the quality of life for our communities. Just this last weekend, we hosted the U.S. Synchronized Figure Skating Sectional Championships. It's the largest annual participant skating event in the world. It had an economic impact of exceeding $4 million with 2,400 skaters. We're next hosting a major sports conference, a wine country half marathon in Yamhill County, a BMX cycling event in Redmond, and a LBGT Soccer World Championship in Portland. With respect to House Bill 4146, our organization is fully supportive of the bill's concept of increasing the state's transient lodging tax and investing those funds back into tourism programs and events, because there is no better return on investments in Oregon than money invested back into Oregon tourism. We would suggest a few principles that might make the House bill a stronger public policy and more effective. One would be to be sure that there are strong accountability measures that are written into the bill, and we would also ask that the bill include language that establishes a sports a provision that allows for a percentage allocation of for local, regional, national, and international sports events which generate tourism dollars for Oregon. I have served as the president of the National Association of Sports Commission. They estimate that the sports tourism industry is worth over $9 billion. It's recession-proof, and it grows annually. We have competitor states like Utah, Texas, and Missouri that receive millions in state support annually to select sports events. So we suggest language in the bill that includes a specific reference to sports tourism could allow us to be more competitive with other states, because winning these events takes capacity building and long-term pursuit packed by adequate financial resources to secure the right match of events for communities throughout Oregon. House Bill 4146 is an exciting bill with colossal economic promise. We hope that you can incorporate our suggestions to help us further establish Oregon as a renowned destination for sports tourism at all levels. Thank you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, my name is Laura Curtis, here today on behalf of King Estate Winery. King Estate is one of the largest wineries in the state of Oregon. We are located south of Eugene in the beautiful Lorain Valley. We employ hundreds of Oregonians in a rural part of the state. And because our business spans both the hospitality and manufacturing sectors, we are a company whose products rely on tourism and the Oregon mystique. Our restaurant and tasting room field thousands of visitors a year, and tourism helps our business thrive. 90% of our sales occur outside of the state of Oregon, so the image we project as a state is incredibly important to our manufacturing business. Tourism helps wineries in our area for sure, but also Oregon breweries and distilleries, not just in our region, but across the state. House Bill 4146 provides an opportunity to draw more people and economic activity into our state. King Estate supports this legislation and the investment in expanding and promoting tourism that helps Oregon businesses and communities become more prosperous.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you so much. We very much appreciate your testimony. And now, Ms. Mateo.
Thank you for allowing me to do it at this point. My name is Nancy Metella. I'm with Tax Fairness Oregon. I'm not Jody Weiser, but I represent her views and Tax Fairness Oregon. Chair Barnhart and committee, we are here to support the 4146, but as a state with extremely low lodging taxes and no sales tax, Oregon is missing out on revenue we should be collecting from vacation and business travelers. In your documents, you have a single page that shows the national state-by-state taxes. Our state lodging taxes are amongst the lowest in the nation, just 1%. 85 Oregon cities and 15 counties impose local lodging taxes ranging from 2% to 13.5%. These lodging taxes are well below the national average of 13.4%. This state of affairs makes no sense. In every sales tax discussion, receiving more revenue from out-of-state travelers is posed as an advantage. Why aren't we collecting more then? This is an unusual stance that we're taking here, but the easiest way is to significantly increase the state's transient lodging tax, and we recommend a tax of 6%. We would dedicate 1% to tourism, but there is an invisible elephant in the room, and that is the people who support the industry are low-wage earners. The 101,000 that are part of the tourist industry make an average of $26,000 a year. The problem is low-income housing. And I know all of you have heard the buzz in the building. Here is a chance for two bills to combine and help out a very severe crisis that the state of Oregon is having, that is low-income housing. The tourism industry creates jobs that need public support, yet we're not collecting significant taxes from the tourists generating those low-paying jobs. The 1% state tax and most local taxes support tourism, not the citizens, and not a single penny goes to education. Vacation and business travelers to Oregon get a great deal, while our state and local communities suffer. This is inappropriate for our third largest export industry. Agriculture and timber are number one and two. Using the increase to fund low-income housing is compelling. With scarce housing available, rents rising, and many houses and apartments being converted to transient lodging, many of the low-income workers are finding themselves without a place to call home. Because of our time constraint here, I'll cut to the chase. Our recommendation is use this bill to increase Oregon's state lodging tax to 6%, with 1% dedicated to tourism and 5% dedicated to low-income housing or the general fund to help the infrastructure to help these people in the tourism industry. Many low-income housing units are being displaced by converting to transient lodging. It is only right that we increase the tax revenue from transient lodging to help create affordable housing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions for Nancy? I have to say that's an intriguing thought. I appreciate the nexus that you found between low-income housing and tourism. I got it in about the third of the last sentence. And I appreciate your testimony very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Chair. I will let me say to those who did not get to testify today, we will reopen this hearing on Monday. I think there are eight of you. If when you come back, you sign in again, so we know who is still ready to add additional information to this bill. We have a number of other bills we have to consider on Monday, so. Those who can limit their testimony to a few points, it would be greatly appreciated. Paul, have I given the notice I need? I have. All right. With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 4146, and the committee is adjourned.